Washington, D.C. Acknowledge me.
Chris Russell on the Team 980.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. Mark, good afternoon, everybody. On a feel-good football Friday in the nation's capital and beyond. Work from the home office today because we have the Best Buddies Homecoming Gala tonight. So going to shoot out to that at the Reagan Building after this. So appreciate CK letting me work from home. Sorry to Matt that we couldn't see each other on final day. That Matt will be with us not forever, but for a week or so as he's going on vacation. Lucky. But that's okay. And Matt's back from the Capitals game last night, which was an impressive pull-away victory after some up-and-down moments. We'll get into that as well. We will be joined by Evan Abrams of the Action Network, who does a lot of good stuff, especially if you like the gambling side of things, which, you know, I am not an expert in, but obviously a lot of people have a strong interest in. And I know, you know, Coach Sheehan does more of this than I do. But on Fridays, we, of course, make our picks against the spread, six picks against the spread. We rank our six teams, one through six. We always pick the Commanders game one way or the other. We will get that all done for you in the 3 o'clock hour. Evan Abrams from the Action Network will join us at 2:45 as a little primer for that. And he's got some really, really, really good nuggets. And I think some interesting prop bet type questions that I wanted to ask him, that he has written about. So we will do that at 2:45. Before all that, we will have time. Plenty of time to take your calls. We're going to get into two main things today. One, what will our reaction be if the Commanders don't make a trade at all or even of any significance? One, the trade deadline is Tuesday. There's also something else going on Tuesday. I don't know what it is, but also something fairly big going on. But this show will focus on that particular deadline and event and election and choice. What will our reaction be if the Commanders do not make a trade? I think that's the best question we can ask you because they are 6-2, and a lot of people have made, or a lot of teams have already made trades, but the Commanders are not one of them. And now they are running out of time and perhaps running out of some options. Now, still, the results of Sunday's games, and even, I suppose, Monday night, can determine how teams operate on Tuesday and Monday and even over the weekend. We will see. But it is coming towards the deadline, and they made two monster trades, different regime, but two monster trades on the deadline day last year, which I think was Halloween. Maybe it was the day before Halloween. I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was Halloween. I know it was Tuesday, and they've moved it back a week later. So we're going to ask and get into what happens if they don't make any trades, or if they make a trade and it's kind of a very small significance, right? Maybe it's a veteran depth move. You know, you've seen a bunch of possibilities. I'm not talking about the name that I brought up with Doc Walker earlier this week, Za'Darius Smith. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, and actually there was a name floated, and I'll bring it up for you when we get into it in a little bit. But just start thinking about that. What will our reaction, win or lose Sunday? Because, you know, again, if they lose on Sunday to the Giants, there's going to be an outcry to do something, right? Hey, don't let this potentially magical season go by the wayside. If they win on Sunday and go to 7-2, you know, everything's great. Everything's awesome. But should they still be patient? Should they still wait and let a golden opportunity potentially go by the wayside? Or should they be uber aggressive? I mean, the way you got to kind of look at it, right, I think, is if the Kansas City Chiefs, who have won the last two Super Bowls and are undefeated and have made two pretty significant trades in the last week or so, bringing in a pass rusher in Josh Uche from New England and DeAndre Hopkins, who I always want to call Bernard Hopkins, the old boxer. I don't know why, but I always want to call him Bernard Hopkins, so I have to stop myself. DeAndre Hopkins, in the last week, week and a half. If the Kansas City Chiefs can do all that, then doesn't Adam Peters and Lance Newmark and the Commanders front office owe it to themselves and maybe to you and maybe to the locker room to do something, to make some sort of addition? Even if the addition doesn't work out exactly as you would hope, even if it's not a big, sexy name that people would recognize, and there's been plenty of big, sexy names that have already been traded. I guess they could get traded again. Probably not. But you get the point. Does Adam Peters owe it to anybody? Or is there something to be said, win or lose this Sunday? And maybe it'll depend on that in your mind, so you could share that with us at 301-230-0980. Maybe it doesn't matter, right? Maybe because it's year one of a recalibration, and again, they have never called it a rebuild. You know, Dan Quinn has called it a lot of things. I think recalibration is one of his things that he's hung his hat on. Whether it's a recalibration, a rebuild, reload, we all know right now we sit here less than now 48 hours away from Sunday at MetLife Stadium in a very winnable game, but not a definite win. A division game, all of that, with a chance to go to 7-2. But even if they lose and go to 6-3, right? And you would think that would scream more to making a move. But does it? Does losing to the Giants tell us more of what they really are? And that is, again, year one of this recalibration and a roster that was nearly turned over 70%. So, you know, you guys are going to feel probably different maybe than I am and maybe than each other. But the overall context is what we're looking for. What happens? What would your reaction be in advance of Sunday's game and of the deadline on Tuesday if they don't make a trade? Let's just leave it at that, because if they make, you know, a minor trade or whatever, you might not be blown away by it. But obviously they think it's going to help them for whatever reason they think that. So let's put our thinking caps on. Your reaction to what happens before Sunday's game. What happens if they don't make a trade on Tuesday? Your reaction, your level of disappointment, your still level of belief in the direction. Is it too early in this reload, in this recalibration, to be making a move and throwing away later round draft picks, potentially throwing away? Or maybe it's a good investment, right? There's a lot of different ways we can go with this. So if you want to chime in on that, I'd love to hear from you. We'll go over some of, obviously, the things that are out there and some of the possibilities and some of the trade matchups. NFL.com did a potential trade matchup with the Commanders that I wanted to get to. So we will do that as well. Again, Evan Abrams from the Action Network will join us. Got lots of really good information. If you're looking for help as you put down a couple of dollars this weekend on either prop bets or the game straight up or what have you, we will talk to Evan Abrams at 2:45. We will have, again, our six-pack picks against the spread, including the Commanders-Giants game. We pick it every week, regardless of whether we like it or we don't like it. And we combine it into one segment with our six top teams in the NFL entering week number nine, all ranked 1 through 6. Again, we don't do it the other way. We do it differently. This show strives to be different. This show strives to be not what you hear elsewhere. This show, whether it's good or bad, we try and do things that nobody else is doing. And it's by design. The other thing that I wanted to get to right off the top here, and we'll throw it out for you, again, at 301-230-0980, and you can mix and match and you can do whatever you want, is how should the Commanders attack the New York Giants? Now, when I say attack, I mean, you could look at it as, hey, on offense and also on defense, right? Or you could look at it just as an offensive thing. And I would tell you this, the last time in week two, even though they scored only 21 points and had to kick 7 field goals to win that game in Austin Seibert's first game with the Commanders, that doesn't mean the game is going to play out, obviously, that way, right? We hope that there isn't now a second consecutive week of red zone blown opportunities, because if you go back to last week's miraculous win against the Bears, that's what it would be. But also, it would be a third game if they can't score in the red zone. And when I say score in the red zone, I mean convert into touchdowns. It would be a third game this year in which, again, they have significant problems across the board, not moving the football, but punching it home. And that's more important to me than anything, right? Because if you don't score touchdowns in this league, the way the ball bounces and the way things happen in this league, luck, unluck, injuries, all of that, it eventually catches up to you. It eventually catches up to you. But if you score a reasonable amount of touchdowns, which this team, quite honestly, statistically, and this is why we always say, right, the statistics are what the statistics are, but you have to have some context. You have to do your best to add context, which when you hear people screaming about DVOA and all that crap and all the numbers that everybody can spew out, right? Why I always say, well, yeah, but this and that and this and that. I think their red zone numbers are way, way lower, as we discussed with Linnell. I think it's 51% change in terms of converting into touchdowns. I think that's 24th or 25th in the NFL because of this, what, 6 opportunities, I guess it was, against the Giants in week two because one of them came from outside of the red zone. And then it was the lack of scoring inside the red zone last week. So you have, I think it was 10 or 11 opportunities in those two games in which they did not score touchdowns. That's going to drag down your percentage because of those two games. That doesn't mean you're a bad red zone team every game or a bad red zone team overall. It means you're a bad red zone team in those two spots, and you better fix it so that that spot doesn't happen against Pittsburgh next week, against Philadelphia on a short week on Thursday night, against a really good defense like Tennessee in early December. You see where I'm getting at? That's why we always try. DVOA does not do this. They think it does, but it doesn't. The rankings and the statistics and the this and the numbers that everybody spews, including sometimes me, does not always provide the proper context. So that's why I'm always trying my best to provide said proper context. So when you say, well, they're a horrible red zone team, they're 51%, they're 24th in the league, they can't score. Well, yes, in two games, they've been terrible in the red zone, but not all year, not in every game. And that's the context that we can provide you, good or bad, right? Just like, again, when early in the year, everyone was bagging on the Commanders' defense for DVOA. We don't do that here. We acknowledge whatever that is, and we tell you it's pretty much full of baloney. Because DVOA doesn't tell you, hey, man, we got off the field three times and almost a fourth time in a Monday night win in Cincinnati. Our defense contributed to that despite giving up 33 points. We don't win that game if our defense doesn't come up with a couple of spots. We don't win if our defense, while, yes, bullied around by the New York Giants in week two at times, and Malik Nabers, doesn't come up with a couple of big plays and maybe some help elsewhere, and holds the Giants to 18 points. DVOA ain't telling you all that. They're just sputing out a calculated formula. Okay, so we're trying to give you the context, good and bad, as to why they win, lose, draw, play good, play bad, what have you. So I wanted to pass that along. Then we have this. Again, the how do you attack the Giants angle is going to be obvious when you say, well, they need to score in the red zone. How do they do that? Oh, they need to run the ball. They didn't do it enough against Chicago. And that's correct. And they did it really, really, really well against the New York Giants in week two. And Brian Robinson was great. But remember, Brian Robinson also squirted out of a dog pile for like 40 yards. So the numbers there skewed a little bit. But I can't deny what the numbers are. And that they had success running at who? The Giants' best offensive lineman, Dexter Lawrence, Sexy Dexy. They had success inside zone and running between the A-gaps. They did. They did. That doesn't mean you're going to have the same success this week, but logically, if you could execute better in the red zone, if you could run the ball like they did in week two, logically, you would think they would be best set up for success on Sunday and to win, logically. But what happens if that doesn't happen? What happens if you can't get on track like you did? What happens if the Giants have made adjustments? What happens if Dexter Lawrence plays the run better? And I'm not saying it was all his fault, but that's where they had some success. And they had that one weird run. Again, I think it was like 40, 41 yards or whatever it was, that Brian Robinson was all bottled up in a pile. Nobody could find him. And then, boom, all of a sudden he squeezes out and he runs, you know, downfield for a huge gain. Again, that added to, it's just kind of like they did a pretty decent job. Again, I've used that term before, against Derrick Henry. But Derrick Henry, because he scored two touchdowns and because he had a late 27-yard run, which did count and was important and was big, everybody thought they did a horrible job against Derrick Henry, when that's not true. Again, context matters. Context, more than stats, matter. So if the Commanders just go in thinking, oh, well, we ran the ball against them in week two, and we ran the ball inside zone up the middle between the tackles, and we could do that again, well, yeah, that might be ideally what you want to do, and it should be ideally what you want to do, but it might not always work. And it might not work a second time against the same opponent because they have the same film, and they know what they did wrong as well. So you got to attack them a different way. And that's what I will give you on the other side. I think the number one thing they can do to win this game and attack the Giants offensively is something that I haven't heard anybody really talking about this week. Maybe I've missed it. Maybe I'm just not paying attention to the right thing. But I'm going to give it to you because I don't think we haven't really talked. We touched on it a couple of times generically. Monday, Tuesday. That'll be a little bit of a hint, okay? But I'll give you specifics when we return and get rocking and rolling on the phones at 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980 on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. All right, it is a feel-good football Friday in the nation's capital and beyond, always live and free on the Odyssey app just before 125. And hey, I can see Matt now. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Chris.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
We figured out this video technology thing. How about that?
Only took 3-4 apps? A full segment?
That's all. That's all. But it's good to see him, and it's good to be on with you guys at 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. So I left by asking two things. Again, what is our reaction going to be if the Commanders make no trades? I think that's a worthwhile examination because it's more likely than not that they will make a trade, but it's also more likely than not that it'll be a ho-hum, somebody I've maybe heard of, not a mover and a shaker. Like everybody asking for J.C. Horn or Denzel Ward or Greg Newsome, probably not going to be that. But what if it's nothing? Are you going to be disappointed that maybe they have this small window where the quarterback is under a beyond reasonable contract and they have all this cap space and they're rebuilding and they're reloading and they're recalibrating the North and all this stuff? And maybe they're 7-2, or maybe they're 6-3, and they're heading into a killer two-game Keystone Cup tango with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Philadelphia Eagles in the span of 5 days. What is your reaction going to be if they don't make a trade? The other thing that we opened up with, how should the Commanders attack? Again, I think a lot of people are going to say, well, if they just score in the red zone, they'll be fine. They're terrible in the red. Yeah, they've been terrible in a couple of games, including week two against the Giants. Not every game plays out the same, including against an opponent that you're familiar with, okay? The other thing is run the ball more. Run the ball better. Don't abandon the run. All of that makes sense. You ran the ball good against the Giants in week two, but we've already pointed out a couple of little things, right? A couple of little things that might go, okay, maybe they're not going to be able to run the ball as well as they did against the Giants in week two and at other times this year. So here's my solution, and I shouldn't call it a solution. Here's my idea. If I'm Cliff Kingsbury, if I'm Jaden Daniels, if I'm Terry McLaurin, I am going to work from minute one, from play one, from down one. I am trying to attack Deontay Banks. And I mean attack him like a lion into a porterhouse steak. I am trying to dog him because that guy has basically been benched for effort and hustle issues. He is on the very, very, very perimeter ring of the Chateau Bow Wow El Day Ball. Okay? Like, they can't stand him, that coaching staff. Yet, Dable has said he'll be the starter. And maybe that's because they don't have anybody else better. I mean, Adoree Jackson is there. They got some other dude at corner that I think you can pick on as well. But if I'm the Washington Commanders, hey, man, how much is your head in the game? How much is your heart in the game? How pissed off are you? Do you care? And if you care, I'll find out. They have had some battles over the last year and a half, Terry and Deontay Banks. He's a first-round pick from Maryland, for those of you that don't remember, and probably many of you do. I think it was 24 overall, somewhere in that range. Not last year, but the year before. Deontay Banks, just for whatever it's worth, again, Pro Football Focus has him as a 55.7 out of 100 overall. A run defensive grade of 43.7 out of 100. A tackling grade, 65.5 out of 100. Pass rush, whatever, 76.7. Coverage, 56.4. Now, that wouldn't suggest that, oh my goodness, you're going to have success on every single play. But the mentality has to be there. Find out where he's at. Find out where his headspace is. Find out what you can exploit and attack. And if it's not with Terry, maybe you do it with Noah Brown. And you try and physical him. Or Luke McKay. Like, there's lots of different ways you can do it. Testing him and making it not so obvious. But do it early. And try and find out where his headspace is. And maybe you get him benched, and maybe that'll be a bad thing. I don't know. But trust me, if they felt they had better options, they would have benched this dude already. Because, again, he has been a nightmare with that coaching staff. I mean, I saw it. I mean, he got benched the other night. I've seen it with the defensive backs coach. I think it's Jerome Henderson. He's been after him all year long. The Commanders should be able to have success vertically. The Giants are going to think you're going to run because that's what you did in week two. That's what you maybe got away from last week. You had success that way. Don't always count on, well, because we had success in week two doing this, we're going to be able to do exactly the same here. And if you can expose another weakness, then you can do that, one, which is part of the reason why we're suggesting it. Two, it makes the ability to then run the football how you want to run the football. And Cliff Kingsbury does like to run a lot of inside zone and, you know, all that stuff. I don't want to get too technical, but he does like that. It allows you to then do more of that, right? The old adage is run to set up the pass. Well, sometimes it works to pass to set up the run. Again, every game, every opponent, every situation is different. So maybe if they attack Deontay Banks early, they can hit a big one. You know, Terry and Jaden have hit a huge, you know, a couple of huge ones against Cincinnati last week, against Chicago, against Cleveland. I mean, they're big play after big play after big play. Why shouldn't, on first and 10 from your own 30 or whatever it is, why shouldn't you try and find out where Deontay Banks is at? That's what I would do. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. So those two things on the table to start. We'll get into some other things as we go along throughout the day. But your call is coming up next. 301-230-0980 after a trending alert right here, right now. All right, as far as Commanders injury news and notes, Cornelius Lucas has been ruled out by head coach Dan Quinn. Brandon Coleman is expected to play and play at left tackle, which is huge news for Washington, who had to finish up last week with Trent Scott, who struggled, certainly. So Coleman comes back after missing a game in concussion protocol. Also, Cleveland Farrell and Frankie Louvu are both expected to play, according to Dan Quinn. Commanders and the Giants. MetLife Stadium, 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Our pregame coverage begins with Earl Forsey at 9 a.m. right here on the Team 980. The DOC taking your calls after the game as hopefully the Commanders could get to 7-2 on the year. And from the Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Jones talking about the 3-4 start once again, saying it's, quote, rougher, a rougher go than I anticipated. Why would anybody think it wasn't? Jerry Jones and the Cowboys going to Kirk Cousins and the Atlanta Falcons. Could old Kirky bury the Falcons at 5-3 is Atlanta. Again, the Cowboys coming off that Sunday night loss in San Francisco. And that's what's trending. All right, everybody. It is a feel-good football Friday in the nation's capital and beyond. And, you know, maybe I should have talked about candy bars and the quarterback a little bit more because we blew out the phones yesterday. I guess everybody got their calls off. And nobody is interested in the two topics that I brought up. at least early on. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What would your reaction be? Again, I'm asking you to think ahead a little bit to Tuesday's deadline. What would your reaction be if Adam Peters says, nah, you know what, there was no trade out there that I felt comfortable about, good about, that improved us, that I thought really improved us, that was worth whatever we pay? I think that's a realistic possibility. I mean, here we are. Teams have been making trades for weeks. Some big names have been on the move. There's not many big names left out there. There's a couple of nickel and dime, 9-to-5 ham and eggers, but that's about it. That's about it. There just isn't a lot out there. So it's very possible that Adam Peters says, eh, you know what? I'm good. I'll get Emmanuel, you know, we'll get Emmanuel Forbes fixed. We'll continue to manufacture the pass rush and get a balanced pass rush. Hey, man, look at Johnny Newton. Came on like gangbusters last week, right?
I think
it's very possible.
I think a big issue with it, though, is the fact that, like you said, there aren't any true 1A stars that are on the market right now. And we're in a state where there's a couple positions, cornerback, obviously, that we are not as secure in. We need a 1A player in those positions to really get to the place we need to get. If we get another, like, okay player, then that's just filling the spot with an okay player that we already have. There really needs to be a reason, in my book, to get a player. But I'm also sitting here wondering, with as many of the veterans who are a little bit older, as many of the guys that you're kind of looking and saying, like, yes, they're coming in this year to kind of bring the energy of a winning organization, and in kind of the later parts of the years, bring whatever talent they still have to this team. I kind of wonder, how many years do we have of Bobby Wagner? How many years?
Well, he's only under contract for 1 year. But so I mean, the answer right now is just this year.
But Zach Ertz, Bobby Wagner, yeah. There are many players that are very talented and have been proving that they are elite in the NFL still, regardless of their age. And coming out of this season, I worry with a lot of those pieces not necessarily going to be on the team still, then we're going to have to fill those holes. And we're in a state where this could be a kind of miracle one and done kind of year. And then coming into next year, missing a lot of pieces, still need to fill a bunch of holes. And we don't see necessarily as good progression on the wins losses counter. There might be progression on players, but the wins losses might not be the same. And so that's where I'm worried, that there isn't a drive to pick anyone up, but there is a drive to shore up the team to be a real late game in the playoffs caliber kind of team.
Well, so my mentality, again, with all of this, just is what it is, right? Like, at the beginning of this year, I didn't think we were going to be in this position.
No, and that this is
to have this discussion.
But this is a position we never thought we were going to be in, and we kind of lucked our way into.
Right, but now that you're here, you can't just say, well, no, we're going to stick to the plan of this being a 2 to 3 year relaunch, rebuild, reload, what have you, because you only have a certain window where, again, Jaden Daniels' contract is feasible. Once you get past year three, even if you don't get a contract extension done, at that point, the price starts to go up. It doesn't go up.
It limits what you're able to. It limits the pieces you're able to put around
correct.
Him,
and that is a couple of years down the road. But my argument, my point is, okay, just because you weren't expecting to be here, doesn't mean it's fool's gold. Doesn't mean you shouldn't act and operate. And this is why we did the topic earlier this week, or maybe it was last week. I can't remember. Late last week about the no, it was early this week with Doc. They're 6-2, but I don't think they're a mirage. I don't think they're a fraud. In 2008, they were a mirage. They were a fraud. In 2018, they were a mirage. They were a fraud. There are teams that are 6-2 and you go, hey, you know what? They're not that good. This team is legitimately good. I don't know if they're great, but they're legitimately good. So if you're legitimately good, you think you've identified the franchise quarterback, You know, or at least we think we know, what the holes are. And again, there's different ways to plug holes, right? The most obvious one is corner. But can you fix it by adding a Za'Darius Smith at pass rushing edge, defensive end? And that makes Benjamin St. Juice and Mikey Sanristil and Noah Igbinoghene and whatever you get out of Emmanuel Forbes better. Yes, you can do that. Or you can add a veteran corner, right? You tried to do that over the offseason. One has worked, Igbinoghene. One has not worked, Michael Davis, right? So now maybe you go out and add another veteran corner. So here's the name that NFL.com wrote about. I believe it was yesterday. I pulled this up. Like, they were trying to play essentially realistic but fantasy trade partner maker kind of thing, right? And the name that they came up with was Jonathan Jones, a corner from New England, right? And look, he's 31 years old. He's got three passes defended this year, which is not a terrible, you know, a ton. One forced fumble, 28 tackles. They say he'll slide right in, you know, well into Dan Quinn's scheme. They say his veteran savvy obviously would help a somewhat young room. It's not completely young, but maybe it would help an Emmanuel Forbes. Maybe it would still help a Benjamin St. Juice. And New England has traded Josh Uche. They have traded somebody else. I can't remember. I'm trying to think who else they may have traded, but they definitely traded Josh Uche earlier this year. You know, it's a rebuild. You know, it's a reload. You know, it's a thing where New England is not winning this year, clearly, right? So the pairing would seem to match, but I don't know if that's, you know, that's a trade I think that would help them, but that's not a trade that would get anybody around here all juiced up, all fired up. But I don't need that as much as I need something to help them. I'm not a believer that, hey, man, we're just going to roll the ball out and let it the chips fall as they may. That's not me. That could be you, but that's not me. My belief is you take a shot when you have a realistic shot. And let me bring you back to last year. I don't know if you remember this, Matt. A week before the trade deadline last year, I think they dropped to 3-4. And I came in and I said that, and this was after a 2-0 start, right? You know, you lost at Philadelphia. You lost the Thursday night game, embarrassed against Chicago. They bounced back the next week against Atlanta. Then they lost a game that they should have probably won. And I'd have to go back and double check all the semantics, but I came in basically a week before the trade deadline and I said, that's it. I'm done. Get rid of both Montez Sweat and Chase Young. And everybody had, oh, get off my lawn. You suck. You're an idiot. You just hate the team. No. I knew what they were. And I knew what they weren't. And if Adam Peters is looking at himself in the mirror, as sexy and as handsome as he is, he probably should know, hey, man, we are ahead of schedule, but we are a good team. I don't know if we're great, but we are good. And I can make this team better. I can give them an extra shot in the arm. You know, everybody talks about flu shots and COVID shots and this shot and that shot and this vaccine and that vaccine. And I'm not trying to do anything political here, but you get the shot in the arm, right? From a football sense, if you go out and even add again a name that people aren't going to be like their skirts blown up about, but you say, well, wait a second, he's a good corner from a good defensive system, so on and so forth. Yeah, that's doing something. That's trying something. So I'd be very disappointed, win or lose this Sunday, if Adam Peters and the Commanders do not make any sort of addition. What about you? 301-230-0980. Your calls coming up next. I see you starting to line up. We will get to Tommy and Myrtle Beach on the other side. And you, 301-230-0980. Also, how should the Commanders attack the New York Giants on Sunday? Offense, defense. We told you our offensive plan. We'll give you our defensive plan as well. On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Hard on a feel-good football Friday. We approach 2 o'clock in the nation's capital and beyond. Always live and free on the Odyssey app. Want to get right out to the phone so we can squeeze in one or two here before the top of the hour. Let's get out to Tommy in Myrtle Beach listening on the Odyssey app. Tommy, good afternoon. How are you, man?
Hey, Chris. How you doing, buddy?
What's up, Tommy? Thanks for the buzz.
Yeah. The one thing I want to touch on, and I think this is a product of sports talk radio, is everything tends to be evaluated from, I call it like the Madden perspective or fantasy football. And I think there's a lot to be desired when you have players that you schematically design into your team, even with shortfalls, because there's an old Gilman High School coach 10, 15, 20 years ago that intentionally would play every player on the team with purposeful reps. In other words, not blowout win reps. They might only get 5 or 6 of these reps, but the whole concept was when you go in there, you're expected to perform to the best of your ability.
At a high level, right.
But your teammates were anticipated to play knowing that you had a shortcoming. And, and that's the great thing about football is that there's the chemistry behind it as well as schematics. And I think that gets lost in these discussions because we tend to hear on sports talk radio all the time is like, oh, we'll just plug in this guy here because he's all – or this or that.
No, so I think this is a great. I think this is a great point, Tommy. But here's one counter that I would just say. I don't think it's just sports talk radio. I think it's within the fan base. I think it's on Twitter or X or whatever. I think. Go ahead.
I agree. I think I'm really saying it's a collection of the fan base and sports talk radio. But I think the biggest dynamic change, not so much ownership, and I think Doc has touched on it, is some of these players from the past are just getting better coaching and put into a better schematic fit as opposed to we're looking for the all-pro fit.
So let me ask you this. Obviously, you're a fan of the team. Yeah. So, like, let's use Emmanuel Forbes as an example, right? I mean, Emmanuel Forbes was given every opportunity to win the job during August. Some people thought he struggled. Some people thought he shouldn't. But for the most part, he played reasonably well. He acquitted himself reasonably well. They started him. They felt good about him. Then he struggled immediately in Tampa, and he's had some really down moments, and he's been bent. And he was injured, and he was banged up, and he was, and then he comes away with the interception against Carolina, maybe a little push off, and then last week, you know, everybody's starting to think he fits. And to your point, like he only played, I think, 6-7 snaps, whatever it was, kind of a late on a tackle. So the question becomes: is that a guy that they can say, okay, like to your point, Tommy? Hey, man, we need 10 high-quality snaps. We don't need you to play 40 or 45 snaps. We need 10 really good snaps. And can you work it like that? Maybe. The answer so far has been whatever they've tried to do with him, it's not good enough. You know, so that's where the difficult balance comes in.
I would counter that with the from a contrarian point of view, is that with this new coaching regime, players are now slated based on schematic and team opponents. So maybe you won't see a featured John Bates getting as many snaps as he does the following week because this coaching staff is so skilled at developing the schematic that best fits a player. I wouldn't count them out. But I also believe in, during the course of the season, continually to bring in competition. And if you bring in somebody at week 9 and he's clearly better than Emmanuel Forbes for a roster spot, well, then you got your answer.
I see exactly your overall point. I would say, like, I'm a big fan of how the Patriots under Belichick and Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel used to do it in my football heyday, where they would game plan, you know, specifically against the weaknesses of the opponent or the opponent themselves and be very chameleon-like. I would love that. From this staff, I don't know how feasible it is in a hard salary cap era with injuries and so on and so forth. I do believe that there is something to be said for, hey man, player development, however we decide, whatever gives us the best, which is what Joe Witt has said all along. But at some point, right, like they decided Jamin Davis, even though we asked him to flip positions, we decided, or they decided, Jamin Davis wasn't cutting it. So at some point, they might decide the same thing for Emmanuel Forbes. And I would understand that because that wasn't their pick. And even if it was, they might still decide that because you got to ultimately cut it. We got to be able to trust you to play at this level for us to give you more than 4 or 5 snaps because one bad snap can determine a game sometimes, you know?
Yeah, and I'll throw this one in there. This is my final thing I'll throw in is they find themselves in the unique position of having now to strike while the iron's hot, meaning championship run, which is a unique situation to be in, because look back at Dan Marino. You know, that first year he comes in and made his deepest run, or early in his career made his deepest run.
And then never.
This is a strike now league.
Yeah.
And I believe in building as the season goes on.
Yeah, well, you're with me then, right? I mean, we're on the same page, totally on that. You have to strike while the iron's hot. You don't get this opportunity every year. To me, it would be a disappointment if they don't add. Tom, great call. Appreciate you. Thanks for getting in. Dr. Sabal, lead off hour number two, just a couple of moments from right now. We're asking, again, how disappointed would you be if they don't make a trade before the deadline Tuesday at 4 o'clock? And how would you attack the Giants? How would you attack the Giants offense, defense, both? What happened? Have you on Sunday, 301-230-0980 on a Feel Good Football Friday on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.